Hey everyone, it's Serge from Libra Lounge. This episode is pretty light and fun, but we go into some heavy topics at the end, including cancer, death, and suicide. I'll have some resources at the end of the show and in the show notes for people who struggle with depression, but if hearing about these things is going to put you in a bad place, you might want to skip this episode.
Welcome to Libra Lounge, a podcast about free software, free culture, and all the other interesting aspects of user freedom, with Christopher Lemmer-Weber and Serge Roklowski.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Serge. So, actually, you and I were talking about something throughout this week because an interesting phenomenon has been happening amongst my group of friends in the town that I'm in, which is that a bunch of us wanted to start speaking to each other again. And we were, you know, kind of had crossed a bunch of various, you know, messaging forms, and we were actually communicating mostly over text messages. And we were like, well, this is no good. So we were like, oh, well, you know, actually a whole lot of us had XMPP accounts from back in the day, XMPP also known as Jabber. And we were like, oh, well, why don't we start chatting over that again? And over this last week, we kind of fired up those applications again. And, We opened up a multi-user chat in Jabber and started exchanging each other's contact information. It kind of hit me like this sudden wave of nostalgia and also feeling of like, oh man, like there was a feeling, you know, some of these different messaging systems kind of felt different over time. Would you say that you felt the same way, that the feelings of some of these systems has been kind of different, even if they might be doing some similar things?
Yeah, I think that over time, there was definitely a different, almost pioneer feeling of instant messengers in the past. And when you brought this topic up to me, I started thinking about having a little bit of nostalgia for some of this. And so I want to go through just my experience of getting on both the internet and pre-internet. So the first time I had exposure to any of these systems was before I had internet access in the 90s, I was on a number of BBSs. And you could do live chat on these BBS systems, and you could talk to other users. For those people who didn't have BBSs, they were basically like all-in-one services that just regular people would set up in their basement or their bedroom, and that everyone would just sort of call in literally with their modems, and you could interact with other users and do file transfers or email or whatever.
It was also my dad ran one, actually.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, on the Commodore 64. It was called, my dad was a religion teacher, and it was called Heavenly Places. And people kept dialing in thinking it was for something that was not religious experience chat.
That's great. So then we got CompuServe, and that was fun. Other people were using Prodigy. And then shortly after that, we got AOL. And this was back in the day when AOL was a per minute charge, but you could enter these chat rooms and also do what we would now call instant messaging, direct messaging. And I remember felt completely amazing to be able to communicate with people about topics, about any topic in the world, and find other people that were interested in it and be able to just chat with people wherever they were in the world. And in fact, I won't get too deep into this, but it's how I met my first serious girlfriend, was on one of these services. And we were on a chat room about, actually it was funny because it was a religious debate room, and we were having these discussions, and it was super fun. And then I got the internet, and I started, actually the first service I used was IRC, and I used, because I was on Windows, I used Merc
as my first. Oh yeah, MIRC, Trout Slap.
Yes, exactly. And then ICQ came around.
Oh yes, the blinking little index card in the corner of the screen. That was a huge deal for me and my friends. ICQ defined the user experience for like all these applications to come for quite a while.
Yeah, and my girlfriend actually knows the woman who did the sound for ICQ.
Oh man, awesome.
So and then what was really cool was then AOL opened up their messenger so that people who were not logged into AOL could use it, and they called it AIM, and that was super great. And at the same time, I was still using IRC. And then I use a service called See You See Me. And that was interesting because it was kind of like Chat Roulette, but not as dirty, apparently, because I talked to people on there and there was no nudity or anything. It was just people being like, oh my God, I am connected with a random person somewhere around the world and I can talk to them and I can see them and hear them. And it was really, really cool. And then around that time for me is when I got into free software. And a few years into that was the first release of Pigeon. And Pigeon is a program that lets you connect to these different services all at the same time.
And it was not called Pigeon at the time.
Right. What was it called?
Game. GAI.
That's right.
They had to rename it because there was like a hidden dispute they had with AOL over the name. So they then renamed it to Pigeon.
And I remember being able to use all the services on there. And I was logged into, you know, AIM, and I was logged into ICQ, and I was logged into, I think I was logged into Skype because you could connect to Skype, although I don't recall. And just around this time for me is when Google released Google Talk. And the cool appeal for Google Talk was that it talked talked Jabber, right? And it were XMPP.
Yeah, well, actually, so I had been into Jabber and XMPP for a number of years before that conversion happened. And I had been fighting with my friends. I would tell them, oh, you shouldn't use AIM. You should use this. And it was called Jabber before it was called XMPP. I'm like, you should use Jabber. And kind of a similar problem that's happened with a lot of federated social web things. That meant that everybody signed up on like the main Jabber, like the kind of the flagship Jabber instance, which went down all the time, like all the time. And so all my friends wrote off like, oh, Jabber's no good. Jabber sucks. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it was like my first experience of being like, it's an implementation, not the protocol. The protocol's great. But, you know, everybody like was like waving me off and like, yeah, this thing will never take off. But yeah, as you said, then Google Talk and Gmail came in and integrated with XMPP/Jabber. And like my buddy list just exploded.
Yep. And that was really exciting for me. And that for me was the moment where I believed that Google was a good player, because they were interoperating when they didn't have to. It was like, okay, well, they're going to interop with email and they're going to interop with instant messaging. And they're going to bring in this new level of interoperability, and they're going to be the leaders. And that's why they're going to win. At the same time, I was using an encryption system that Pigeon had called Off the Record. And Off the Record was really interesting on a number of dimensions. We could do a whole discussion about that. But what was neat about it, one of the big features is it worked across different communication platforms. So I could use OTR with AIM. I could use OTR with ICQ or XMPP or any of those systems. And it just worked. And that was really amazing for me, and I loved it, and I still miss it, frankly, to this day.
Well, it's kind of funny. It wasn't like the OTR level on top of things was like a really hacky way to do things, because it didn't really do it at the protocol level. It like put these hacks on another layer on top of it, on just kind of the messages coming back and forth, and hopefully your application understood what those were. Otherwise, else you get these weird, if you didn't have OTR, you get these weird messages that are like, we're trying to establish an OTR connection. And then it would just be like this, like, you know, a whole bunch of garbage would just come there. And then the person's like, what's happening? But yeah, if both people had OTR, it surprisingly worked and worked really well.
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, Chris, the landscape of instant messaging has changed. I don't think instant messaging and chat rooms have gone away. If anything, I think they're more popular than they ever have been, but the platforms have changed over the years. And so, as you said, I think it'd be a good idea to talk about what happened, right? So why aren't we using the same instant messengers that we were using 10 or 20 years ago? What are the current generation, and what do those current generation have in terms of both interface and protocol? And then maybe where we are now and where we think things might be going, or where we would like to see them go.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about what kind of the user experience of some of these things was back in the day, because I feel like the user experience has shifted, actually. One thing that you brought up, ICQ, I feel like ICQ and IRC were kind of the two standard feelings that you would have, like the kind of two standard shapes of messaging that you'd have on your desktop in this era, kind of before the mobile era of messaging took off. Would you agree? Like that ICQ, pioneered that Windows had this notification area on the screen, and it pioneered putting this icon there that normally, if you were just online, it would be this green flower. And then if you got a message, it would have this little flashing index card indicating that a message was coming in. And like all the applications followed this pattern, right? Pigeon followed it, everything.
I think that we can take one step back. So the difference, the two paradigms were really, and I realize that both of these applications I'm going to describe are proprietary, but I think they were hugely influential. So there were other IRC clients than Merck, but I think Merck had the nicest, cleanest interface, where you had the chat, the IRC channel, which is basically a chat room in a big window, and then on the side you had all the people in there, and you could right click and get a context sensitive menu for things you could do to interact with each individual, and that was really powerful. There were other chat, there were other IRC clients, and they just weren't as easy to use. And what ICQ had was ICQ was optimized for one-to-one communication, and I don't think it even did multi-user chat. And what you had was you had a buddy list, a list of your friends on what Jabber later called your roster, right? And then you'd click on them, you click on that name of your friend, and a window would pop up, and that window would have your one-to-one chat, and you could have multiple one-to-one chats. I don't remember if it had tabs, but it definitely had multiple windows, and every conversation was very clear that it was a one-to-one conversation. And as you said, the other thing that ICQ pioneered was this idea of having notifications, although I think Merck also had that. So you could, you'd see in a sort of semi-interruptible way, oh, I've got a new message. And that was in a way kind of addictive. It's like, oh, I got a new notification. I got to respond to that.
Right. Yeah. I think you're right in pointing out that these being the two kind of predominant paradigms in terms of, and it being those two applications that kind of define them. By the way, the tabs thing, I think it actually was Game/Pigeon that innovated it. I could be wrong, but I remember trying to convince all my friends, you really need to use, you know, Pigeon, and one of the, or Game at the time. And one of the selling points I would say is, look, you don't need to have 50 windows open. You can have one with these tabs. Do you remember that was actually a big selling point of Firefox early on?
Yeah, I think that's true too. Yeah. I now that I'm remembering, it's been a long time. I think that's right. I think that was a Game thing.
Yeah.
Because before Firefox, that, yeah, you'd have lots of little interface. You'd have lots of little individual windows, and then you have to keep track of all those windows.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember when Firefox first came out, like the big advertisement you would make for everybody was tabs, 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 tabs. And it's the same thing with Pigeon. And like, it's so long since that happened that like the idea of tabs being a really big deal, it's kind of strange. But that was like the free software innovation in both of those programs, I think, was the introduction of tabs. I could be wrong, but in general, that most of the shape did come from those two proprietary applications, and I think was kind of mimicked. I mean, that happens pretty often, right? Like if you look at like chiptunes, like most chiptune applications are written, they all look like this old program called Fast Tracker. There may have been another one before it, I forget. But I like, you know, the pattern of like some application gives kind of the definitive look and feel and user experience, and then a bunch of applications mimic it. But what's interesting is that, you know, even though you had IRC, which was really optimized for group chats, and you had these, you know, like ICQ-ish, AIM-ish, XMPP-ish type applications for like Pigeon, even though both of them could handle the other one's domain, the applications were generally not as good for that other domain. Like they would oftentimes support it and it would be awkward.
Like Pigeon supported IRC.
Poorly. IRC and XMPP multi-user chats.
Right.
But like, it doesn't feel right. Like, that interface feels wrong for whatever reason. Like, I think it's because, like, you know, oh, do you actually put that in its own separate window, or should it just be a tab in there? And, like, it doesn't have, for some reason. And then, you know, the same thing with IRC. You can open up a direct message, but it's not quite as nice as scrolling through that roster list and seeing, ah, here are my friends that are online. Oh, these ones are available. I just really would love to talk with this friend right now, you know?
So do we want to talk about why we think that the current generation, that this previous generation died off, or do we want to talk about today?
Yeah, no, I think we should talk about what kind of killed it. I think, and it's not dead, right? Like, so these things are not completely gone. I have friends that I continue to talk to. You know, the free software community is still very active on IRC, and I still have people that I talk to on XMPP. And as I said, there's a weird thing where it's like kind of coming back. But
the proprietary ones, the proprietary platforms, so ICQ got folded into AOL. And that was cool for a while. And then AOL shut AIM down.
Yeah. And my buddy list just collapsed. Everybody that I hadn't convinced to move over to Jabber just disappeared.
And then I feel like, even though we're going to talk about IRC, when Google basically announced that they were shutting down their XMPP gateway, and it wasn't really possible to use their software within Pigeon, my use of Google Talk drastically decreased. And I still use it sometimes for hangouts and meetings that I need to take, but for the most part, I don't use it anymore.
Well, yeah, so this is a sad lesson for the Federated Social Web today, or any decentralized system, is it can be really thrilling when that big player comes in, because you're like, yes, they're pulling in pretty much everyone else, right? But if they decide to exit, then you're kind of screwed. Like, if you haven't distributed people outside of the big player, I mean, my buddy list kind of became a ghost town during that whole process. And honestly, I've stopped talking to a lot of people that I used to talk to very regularly. And that's a big bummer, you know, because of that defederation, I guess.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a lesson for us as a community to learn, which is, yeah, it's great when a big player comes in, a proprietary player that says, oh, we're going to support this thing. And then they convince everyone to use it. And oftentimes, I don't want to get too deep in down this rabbit hole, but I know people that also stopped running their own mail server because, hey, Google will run my mail server for free. And then suddenly now the number of independent mail servers has drastically gone down. And if you're not using Gmail, your email is suspect, and et cetera. So that's definitely a lesson that we need as a community to learn.
So I think there's a couple of other things too. Okay, let me say one of the ones that I think is not the case. I don't think it's that XMPP was not a good protocol, because actually I think XMPP is a really great protocol and remains a source of inspiration for me. You know, XMPP did a lot of things right by being, I talk a lot about the actor model in ActivityPub, and XMPP is also an actor model system. And, you know, it did support and does support extensions, many of which have been adopted by the community kind of incrementally. It, you know, supported a much better design of multi-user chat from a protocol perspective than IRC ever did. It like supports a lot of the things that people want from multi-user chat things from like way long ago, even though people generally haven't used it for that. So I don't think it's a protocol problem. You know, yeah, it's using XML, and XML is not very popular today, but that's not that big of a deal. I think that another thing that really changed was also actually the way that we run applications. And so one of those, we could say, is that people started using smartphones, and there might not have been clients for these things on their smartphones, right? Like, recently, conversations.im has become fairly popular on Android. We're popular-ish, right? And it seems pretty good. But it took a long time for that to be, to kind of pick up, and for something that felt really nice and familiar to be there. And I feel like maybe that's part of it also. I also know that I actually think the free software desktop also changed things. So when there was a switch from GNOME 2 to GNOME 3, we mentioned that there was that pioneering thing that ICQ did, which is to put the thing in the notifications area that showed you whether or not a message was still there. And I really didn't realize how much I relied on that until I switched to GNOME 3. And then people would message me and I would not notice that they messaged me for hours because GNOME 3 dropped that notification area. And so I, you know, no longer had that kind of like, I step back to my computer and like, I'm like, oh, you know, like my friend Jay just messaged me. I should, you know, like respond back, you know, it would be like 5 hours later and then the conversation would be stale. And there were some extensions you could install. And if you switch to Epiphany, GNOME would do some things really nicely. But I noticed that actually around that time, and actually this is not a GNOME 3 hating thing because I am and especially was at that time a huge defender of GNOME doing all these experimentations with things. But sadly, I like even though you could install plugins and extensions that would handle this, they would break between releases and stuff like that. And I never got a setup that felt as nice as it used to be in GNOME 2. And I noticed that a bunch of my other free software friends at the same time, I guess because that kind of reliable, trusty interface design that was built into the desktop kind of disappeared, for whatever reason, a lot of us stopped kind of noticing each other's messages, which decreased our responsiveness time. I don't know. Maybe that hasn't been the experience of other people, but I know that several of my friends and I had conversations about that.
Yeah, I think there were a number of contributors. You mentioned mobile apps, and the early Jabber supporting mobile apps were they were functional, but they were a little bit tricky to use. They seemed like, you know, experimental. They didn't have a lot of UX expertise being put in them, which is understandable because they are probably just individual developers who, and this might not have been their expertise, especially when mobile apps were new and it was, you know, there weren't easy libraries that they could rely on to do a lot of this work. So the other applications they just kind of took over because they were easier to use. And also, I think you may be underestimating how popular SMS and MMS were, right? Or are.
Oh, no. Yeah. You're right. No, you're completely right.
So I think it might be useful to talk about today and where we are today in this landscape. And so I just wrote down a couple of or a number of instant messengers or real-time communication platforms that I still use. I hate to admit it, but I actually still use Skype, and Skype was and still is pretty great and reliable, even though it's not nearly as good as it was before Microsoft bought it. I think a lot of these platforms have become specialized, and the one I'm thinking about in particular is Slack. So a lot of workplaces use Slack, and if people who've not used Slack, it's basically a very modern-looking IRC.
Well, right.
It's okay. IRC on a web page with back scrolling and previews.
Well, wait, and this okay, you just hit something really important with Slack. And actually, we at the panel I was on at Libre Planet this year, we talked about this a bit, which is it's actually the Slack bit distresses me because, as you said, Slack looks so much like IRC. Like Slack basically was like, oh, look at this thing that all these kind of, you know, free software and other tech nerd people have been doing for a long time. Let's just take that and repackage it in a way that's more accessible and generally used in the browser, maybe on mobile clients as well, and make it convenient for modern audiences.
They also added bots as a first class sort of object. Although we always had bots.
Yeah, we always had bots. I remember the first time that I saw an IRC bot, it blew my mind, right? Like that there was a, you know, that this thing was like, I'm collecting a message. You can, you know, like come back later and like, or I'll deliver it to them later. And, you know, all sorts of silly things. IRC bots are like, IRC is not a good protocol in many ways, but it's extremely simple, which means it's very easy to learn to program network stuff using it, which means that we've, like the culture of building IRC bots has been in from early on. But you're also right. I think there was also a weird era where there was an era of hype that like the next big thing in the venture capital world was going to be these chat bots, which didn't happen.
A little. Well, it happened, but in a very different way. The by the way, do you know the song about IRC bots from Base Hunter?
I don't.
I will link that into.
Okay,
but there's a whole techno song about IRC bots. It's awesome.
Awesome, but here's the point that I want to the question I want to ask you. You know, why did we fail to capture, if we had almost all the ideas right, like the free software world, you know, pretty much had everything there, and yet this proprietary, you know, Silicon Valley company, you know, whooshes in and manages to cover this domain in a way that the free software world didn't. What did we miss?
So I think there's a couple of answers to that. So first of all, there are some features that Slack has that we don't have. And then the number one
emoji
that IRC is missing is backlog. And that's pretty huge. And that's something that I also felt like XMPP, although there is an extension
XMPP
supported.
XMPP multi-user chat has backlog.
But it's not universal. And Slack, it's there. And the other thing is, I think you can't underestimate the power of marketing, right? This is a company that has a lot of money behind it. And they would advertise on NPR and other places. And that's how people would hear about it. And for some people, for a lot of people, Slack was their first exposure to chat.
Yeah. Multi-user
chat.
The first time I ever encountered Slack was, and it was when I was doing the Stripe open source retreat, and I was staying in this apartment with a few other people who, you know, I was just kind of renting this place with like a number of other people were also living there. And one of the people who was working there, I don't remember what it was that she was doing. She wasn't a programmer, and she was talking about how much she loved chat, Slack, and how it allowed her to be a remote employee, which, you know, Slack partly came out at the right time of when companies were starting to really explore remote employees in a way that was very similar to the way that programmers have been doing remote collaboration for a long time. And she's like, yeah, I love Slack. And I had never heard of it. And I looked at it and I'm like, wow, this looks almost exactly like IRC. And she's like, you know, well, what's IRC? I don't know what that is. And she's like, well, I like Slack because Slack lets me enter all these emojis and Slackbot, you know, says cute things to me. And, you know, like, and it's a great way to connect to my coworkers. And like, I was like, you know, yeah, okay, I can appreciate that. And then I also just felt very sad. Like, I felt very sad, like it was an opportunity lost. But you're right, there's a lot of marketing there. There's also the willingness to set up private servers for corporations and things like that.
Well, I think what you're bringing up is the ease of on-ramp, right? And I because I also want to talk about Discord, because I put Slack and Discord in the same bucket in my mind. And I know a lot of people, and including myself, who are on Discord, who are parts of, you know, if you want to make a community on Slack or Discord, it takes you a minute. And then you get your own quote unquote server, right? What they call a server. It's just an instance. And for us, you know, if I said, okay, well, let's set up my own IRC server, that would take me, you know, at least an hour, right? I have to find which one and install it. You know, I'd have to maintain it, but I can just go on Slack or Discord and just, you know, click a couple of buttons and type in the name and I'm done.
Right.
So that's really powerful. And they really captured that, both of them, and they're very similar looks and feels for both of these technologies. So I think that we can learn a lot from them, and it's not just we've lost. We need to, I think what they've taught, what they need to teach us is that we need to make it easy to set up and make it easy to share instances. That's hugely important. And make those instances quote unquote private, because they're not really private. Neither Slack or Discord really have any privacy, but they give the illusion of privacy and the illusion of being exclusive. And that's again, very powerful. So let's move on a little bit. The other one that I think is hugely popular is WhatsApp. I'm not on WhatsApp, but a lot of people I know are, especially Europeans. I know they'll have whole families and other groups just on WhatsApp. And
Google,
I don't know what
Facebook
your experience recently, with that.
Sorry to interrupt.
Well, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that the Facebook Instant Messenger is merged with WhatsApp yet, or is that like...
Not currently. No, they're currently separate. And WhatsApp was a pretty good actor for a long time. Their model was, well, we're not going to sell any ads. Well, what they sold were essentially emoji packs. So they were end-to-end, it was end-to-end encrypted, but then they sold emoji packs. And then the whole company got sold to Facebook, and the founders basically quit. They said, oh, they don't want to work at Facebook for various reasons. And there's a lot of talk about what WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, how they want to be, how Facebook wants to combine them and then turn them into basically a Western version of WeChat. And WeChat is this Chinese company that, and what they've done is they've integrated payment systems and other things directly into this chat interface. At once frightening, but on the other hand, kind of from a tech perspective, intriguing. And I'm wondering what kind of things we could learn from looking at WeChat.
Yeah. See also Libre Lounge episode with Sean O'Brien.
Yes, exactly. And so some of this end-to-end encryption stuff that came out of WhatsApp got turned into OpenWhisper and became Signal. And I use Signal on my phone. I know a lot of non-technical people and technical people who use Signal. You are one of the few friends of mine who is technical who doesn't use Signal. And I know we've talked about this in the past. We should absolutely have an episode on why you don't use Signal. But I think Signal is worth mentioning because it is free software and it is secure and private.
Right. Well, I'm not going to out who they are, but it's myself and one other well-known free software activist you're like, you two are the only people I know who are not on Signal. And both of us, it's for the same reason. It's that Signal is not an F-droid. And there's like this historical fight that basically has to do with the Signal people saying, we don't want our stuff packaged. We don't want to take the work to make it easily installed in a separate app repository. Google Play and the Apple Store are like the only places people should be getting things from, which I find very disturbing.
That's not actually what they say, but I don't want to. I think this is definitely a discussion for another time.
Okay.
Because I've read these. I've read these back and forth. I've read these long posts. They give some very strong technical arguments about why they don't like F-Droid. And it has nothing to do with this is the only, Google Play is the only place you should get them. It has to do with features that F-Droid is missing. And then they say, what if you don't want to use Google Play, you can download the APK yourself.
Right. But it's not reproducible currently.
It's not reproducible. Yeah, it's true. So it's not reproducible as far as I know. But anyway, I think Signal is definitely worth mentioning, though, because it has many of these features and it is secure and it is run by an independent organization.
And it's also an interesting aspect is also that it's not federated, right? So, the Signal founder says, well, the reason for that is simplicity, right? We don't have to coordinate protocol, like agreement of protocol between all these different things. We can roll out our application and know that everybody's speaking the same thing. You don't have to worry about something like XMPP, extensible protocol stuff. And also the fact that they're using, telephone numbers as a way to link
identifiers.
Right.
Right. So if you didn't, if you tried to federate that, what you need is some way of saying, well, wait, how do I map a phone number to which server it's on? And that the server source code is out there, but there's no way of currently in the implementation of separating that out. So you'd have to have some kind of external database lookup of saying, okay, well, this user with this phone number with this unique identifier is on this server versus this other server. So that would have to be added, and I think the idea of OpenWhisper is that it's kind of like Wikipedia, right? Wikipedia isn't federated either, and frankly, one of my concerns or one of the things that I've talked about in terms of OpenStreetMap was that it wasn't federated, and I wanted it to be. But these are single services, so being not federated isn't a terrible thing, but it's definitely a different philosophy than we have in some of the other in some of these systems.
And it could mean that that the OpenWhisper systems shuts down and then everything disappears again, basically. Like it's another one of those scenarios.
Yeah, and just like Wikipedia, it could be that exact same scenario could happen. So let's actually, since we're talking about Federation, let's talk
talking about Federation and we're talking about Signal, can we talk about the thing that XMPP gained partly because of Signal is OMEMO, right? Like OMEMO is a protocol for, which is kind of like, you can think of it as the next generation kind of version of OTR that's inspired by the way that Signal works.
I don't know anything about OMEMO.
Well, it's interesting stuff. Maybe we should cover it at a future time.
Because I've never heard of it.
Anyway, Federation.
So let's talk. This is one where we could have an entire episode, and I think we should have an entire episode about Matrix. And I know you have strong feelings about it. I have lukewarm feelings about it. And so let's talk about the positive things about Matrix. And then let's talk about some of the things that we don't love. And maybe in a future episode, we can have an expert on and talk about Matrix.
Yep.
So let me start with some of the good things about Matrix. So Matrix is an application that is very similar to Slack, and it's very similar to Discord. And it is inspired by both of those. And it is a client-server protocol that has a default web interface called Riot. I don't know if it's called Riot. There's a popular client called Riot. They have, it's completely free software. They also have phone versions of the software. And it is possible to run your own Matrix server up to a point. And I'll get to that because I have some concerns and complaints about doing that. But it is free software and a lot of people like it because it has more of the features that people have come to expect in both Slack and Discord, and that includes things like being able to upload files along with your conversation, having visual previews, and having voice chat built in as a first class object.
Yeah, so there are some...
Oh, and encryption.
Right. So there are some things that I think that is... Well, it's another reason that people like Matrix so much is that it has a... is that the Riot application is pretty easy to use, right? Like, and easy to install for many people. And having an easy to use and easy to install, it's the on-ramp thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's also familiarity and the fact that they spent so much energy and time building a tool set that looks familiar to people who are technical and geeky, but also looks extremely familiar and easy to use for people that are used to systems like Slack and Discord, where you can just bring someone in and they don't even have to know that they're using some kind of federated system. So let's talk about some of, I don't know what you're going to talk about, Chris, but I'm going to talk about my frustrations with it.
Go ahead.
So my number one frustration with Matrix is that they say, oh, we're fully federated, but the identity servers are not. And so I currently have a Matrix server running on one of my machines, but I don't have an identity server. And that really frustrates me. The idea that, oh yes, I have a server, but my identity, sort of the core part that I think of as important, you have to communicate with their server team and be vetted, and it just doesn't feel like an open federation system like ActivityPub or email or any of those. That's my number one complaint. I have others, but that's my number one complaint.
Yeah. So one complaint that's very frequently raised, it's not my main concern, is that the most popular application out there is an Electron app, which, you know, for those that don't know, is basically like, let's bundle a whole web server, you know, the application is a Node.js web server plus, you know, a browser. But, you know, people can write other clients, so that doesn't bother me too much, actually. The thing that I think does bug me is actually the protocol design. So I've looked at the protocol a few times, and the way that it's looked to me is it's very REST server kind of like, but the REST server aspect is very, it's kind of, it looks to me like instead of having like a very strong kind of like foundational base, it was a bunch of people developed you know, kind of REST APIs and then just kind of codified that API that they got. Like, it doesn't, well, okay. I think XMPP and ActivityPub are both very nice because they follow the actor model, and the actor model has a very nice foundational concept. And these kind of ad hoc REST server things, I feel like, are not as clean of a way to define things. So, and that might sound like complaints from somebody who's stared at protocol stuff for too long. And it is, right? You know, like, it is a complaint from somebody who stared at protocol stuff for too long. Most users don't care, right? If it works, they don't care, right? You know, and that's, yeah, that's fine, right? You know,
but I think, but I think it's a valid complaint when you're talking about wanting multiple implementations, right? And when you're talking about edge cases, because when you build these systems, edge cases are where things get funky and weird, and having a strong foundational model is how you, is basically how you, I don't want to say get around that, but, you know, if you start off by kind of just ad hoc building, then you get into these weird scenarios, which is going to get to my second problem with Matrix, which is that I have had issues where suddenly something just doesn't quite work. And it, and then the answer from the Matrix people is, well, why don't you just use one of the main Matrix servers? And my answer to that is because then I'm not federating. Right. And the whole reason I want to use Matrix is to federate, and I don't want to use one of the main servers. And yeah, they're just like, oh, well, it's constantly shifting and changing, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be set down. The protocols are going to settle down, but you're going to need to upgrade your software and this and that. And I'm just like, this is too complicated for me, which means it's too complicated, which means one of two things. So if you're an average user, an average person, it's too complicated for you because you're not going to be upgrading your server all the time and having to keep up with the bleeding edge. And certainly if you're at a large organization, you don't want to have to keep upgrading or being stuck to some incompatibilities of some third party. And so that makes it a poor choice for them. And then that doesn't leave too many people in the middle, which is why, in my opinion, there aren't too many independent servers running Matrix right now.
Right.
So that's my beef with it.
So there's a funny thing that we, I agree that Matrix is doing good work in terms of building a mostly decentralized system that is free software and getting in the hands of users. And I really appreciate that. So I don't want to sound like I'm just hating on Matrix, because I think that that's valuable. But, you know, those are the concerns I raised are the concerns I have. But I also think that, you know, since we're talking about federated things, there's another form of, there's a couple other forms of, you know, messaging that are federated. Well, we kind of didn't talk at all about how modern social media systems are in some ways also kind of similar to these instant messaging systems that we talked to, right? Like Facebook and Twitter, even without using the special, like instant messaging style client for it, kind of resemble in some ways instant messaging systems, but the user experience is kind of tuned to be different, especially with the idea that you might post public messages, which is kind of a thing that instant messenger systems didn't have, right? But one of the funny things is that one of the ways that I sometimes talk to people, you know, directly is by sending direct messages over the Fediverse. And right now, so ActivityPub was actually designed, one of the reasons why, you know, OStatus, that ActivityPub was developed, was that OStatus didn't have a nice way to do this. And ActivityPub at its core was like, we're going to do email style addressing. I guess we could also say email is, you know, in this category, but it's going to have email style addressing where you could directly message certain people. And it is true that I probably more frequently, or at least with a wider group of people, do something that resembles what I used to do with instant messaging over Fediverse direct messages, which is kind of funny to me. Well, it isn't funny, right? Like, 'cause that was intentional, but the current interfaces on like Mastodon and stuff like that, even though ActivityPub was designed for direct messages to be a first class citizen, or even maybe even more of a first-class citizen other than public messages. The funny thing is that kind of the because of the way that ActivityPub was adopted, the general perception and the user experiences of the applications presented have primarily been oriented towards kind of the public social media perspective.
I agree. But so we've been talking for a while, and I want to get to something that you and I are both passionate about, and we don't have a lot of time, so I want to jump to that.
Okay.
Which is there is a conspicuous piece missing from our discussion of early instant messengers, and that's MUDs.
Yes.
And MUDs are not just instant messengers. They were a whole way of interacting and communicating that is still unique to this day. And so I'm going to talk about my first experience on a MUD and how it, well, on a MUD that wasn't just a regular gaming MUD, and how it changed how I saw computers forever. So when I was in college, I worked at a computer lab. I was not all that technical. And I met these, what I'm going to call cool kids, and I don't remember what the name of this MUD was, but these guys were like, hey, do you want to join our MUD? And I was like, yeah. So I logged onto this MUD, and it was basically like a text adventure, like Zork or any of those other ones. And you interacted with very simple commands. And I appeared in this room, and it was kind of like a chalet, like there was snow outside. On the screen it said there's a roaring fire, and there's people talking, and they're drinking. And I couldn't understand what anyone was saying. It just had garbled text. And then I see on the screen that someone grabs me and holds me down and shoves a fish in my ear. And suddenly I see on the screen the Babel fish has embedded itself in your head. And suddenly you can hear and understand everyone. And suddenly all the text became readable and I could understand everyone what they were saying. And just as I did that, R2-D2 rolled through the area, beeping and bopping, and there were wizards and people and dragons and creatures, and you could go on a regular RPG, you know, fantasy style adventure, while at the same time literally simultaneously communicating with friends, while simultaneously doing really cool computer sciencey things like creating objects. And you absolutely felt like a wizard or a demigod, where you make things in this virtual world. And it was super easy, super powerful, and with a level of immersiveness that nothing has since touched. And when you, Chris, talked about Sprightly, which was your idea for a distributed, federated MUD, I just welled up with emotion because of these interactions and how rich and powerful they are, and my nostalgia for it, and how much I'm excited for this to happen again, but this time on a worldwide scale. So I wanted to make sure that we talked about that.
Yes. Side note, you actually told that exact story in a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, but not everyone listens to all of our episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. So it is exciting. I think that it is an interesting way to do things. So one reason why I think that this is really interesting is, as you said, users could program the world, right? And the ability for the world to be much more rich, because you've got an experience where people are able to collaborate on building a world together and things happen in it. Okay, the things happen in it, I think, is actually the key thing that isn't as much the case in some of these other systems, right? So like if we go all the way back to MIRC, I mentioned Trout Slap, and we didn't explain what that was. It was like this command you could have put in there that would be like /Trout Slap user, and it would say like, you know, whoever does it, like slaps the other person around with a large trout. And it was like this funny, goofy thing that was thrown in there, but it was kind of a maximum amount of interactivity that you would have on IRC, because it didn't really affect the world that you were in. And I think that's what's interesting about MUDs, is that you're able to change the world that you're inside of as you're walking around. But it's actually the case that MUDs are not unique in this In some ways, I heard that one of the most popular social networking systems amongst teenagers right now is Fortnite, right? Which is also a world in which you can interact in things and stuff like that, except, you know, you don't have any ability to contribute to that world yourself, right?
Yeah, and I think we didn't talk about the importance of games and interactivity in games. Something that when you mentioned Fortnite, it made me think about was that I used to play a proprietary MMORPG called A City of Heroes. And I used to meet my regular superhero role-playing group on City of Heroes. So we were playing superheroes in a tabletop game, and then we'd go on City of Heroes and play more superheroes. And when one of my friends, got cancer and passed away, we had a headquarters in the game, and we set up a memorial for him in the game, so that whenever we would go back to our secret headquarters, we would be reminded in some way of his presence. And that was very powerful. And when City of Heroes shut down, even though I had stopped playing, my first thought was that my little memorial, or our little memorial, was going to go away. And I remember thinking how incredibly sad that was.
Wow.
So
that's both an amazing story and also one that I weirdly have like a very similar parallel to. Like, as in terms of my origin story of these things, is myself and my friends got involved in a game called Grail, which was like a top-down 2D Zelda type thing where you could like press a button and open up this editor and start programming the game as you ran it. And that's how a bunch of my friends, when I was a teenager, we all became interested in programming, was the ability to edit this world and run our own servers and stuff like that. And one of this is not a pre-planned thing on the episode. I had no idea that we had this thing in common. But one of my friends, Matt DeSpears, committed suicide a number of years ago. And I discovered that he had built a card trading game inside of the game. And I never knew him. Like, he was always a person who had a lot of trouble kind of completing things, but he built this entire card trading thing inside of the game that a bunch of people picked up. And granted, this is a proprietary game. It's not free software. But it, you know, a bunch of people had picked it up and started playing it. And when I wrote about his death, I got emails from people who were really sad to find out that he had died. They had wondered what had happened to him. And it's because, you know, he contributed, he touched this little social world in a way that like was tangible to the other people experiencing it. On the way to the funeral, my friend Ava and I decided, we said, we have to do something in honor of Matt, and we decided we wanted to build a free software replacement for that game. And we didn't end up actually doing that, but it actually set the groundwork for what we did with Liberated Pixel Cup. And that's why Liberated Pixel Cup, which was this two-part contest with both artwork and games that were all made to match this certain style, why it looked kind of Zelda-like, was in memorial of Matt in some ways. And I just find it really interesting that, you know, that we both have this shared experience where someone really dear to us, their sense of selves lived on in kind of this interactive dynamic world, maybe even after their passing. And I don't know, I feel like there's something really powerful about that. And for some reason, something that's really powerful that, for the large part, maybe with the exception of Minecraft, most modern systems don't have.
Yeah. Sorry. That really touched me. So I think, you know, we've really gone for a circle here, but I think what you're touching on is how deeply impactful the core idea of communication on the internet is, and how I remember when I first got on the internet, and you know, even before I had internet access, it was just AOL, and I got online, people were like, well, this is no replacement for real life. People are going to get sucked into this. And I remember thinking, but they don't understand this. This is just as real because there are people behind the keyboards. Like, this is just as significant. And I don't know if I entirely believe that now. I think real life interactions are richer, but I think emotionally they're just as real for us, and they can be. I'm going to say one more emotional thing, which is just, I know a number of people who are trans, and the first place that they could express their gender is in games, where they could choose a character design, an avatar, or whatever that more closely resembled their internal representation of self. And it might be years before they could come out, but they were able to be themselves using these online platforms. So, again, I think that having these kind of rich systems where it's, you know, yes, it's communication, but it's more than that. It's world building, it's self-expression, it's creation, it's creativity. That is super, super important. And it's more than just casual conversation. It's deeply important and meaningful and impactful. And it's one of the things that really intrigued me about Sprightly. It's one of the reasons that I specifically, you know, wanted to work with you, frankly, on this project, is because I know that you're at the forefront of some of this stuff, and I wanted to be part of that. So thank you for sharing that story. I know it's a weird place to kind of end.
It is.
But I think it's... Sorry.
No. I was probably going to say the same thing you were, which I think is pretty much that maybe it's fitting, though, right?
Yeah. You know, for someone like me, you know, again, I kind of come back to this. I met my first significant girlfriend, my high school girlfriend, on AOL, and I spent a lot of time. So my current partner and I, we don't live in the same city all the time. I visit her and she visits me, and we spend a lot of time online, and communication systems are vitally important. And again, you know, for people in my life who've either passed or trans or have mobility issues or social issues, these systems are, I don't even have the words for how important they are. And so, the tone certainly is different than what we had thought this episode was going to end on, but I'm glad we're ending here on this note. So speaking of, I have to make this really awkward transition now, so I hope you all excuse me. So if you'd like to communicate with us in IRC, we're at #LibraLounge on Freenode. We're also on the Fediverse at LibraLounge at floss.social. On Twitter, we're at @LibraLounge. You can email us at podcast@LibraLounge.org. I think that's everywhere, and hopefully one day we'll be somewhere else in some kind of place where you can richly interact with us. But that's it for now.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we sign off, Chris?
No. The episode, as you said, kind of hit me in the feels at the end, but I'm glad it did. So thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it, and see you next time.
You've been listening to Libre Lounge. You can find and subscribe to us at LibreLounge.org. This podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 International License. Our theme music is Bossa Nova by Joth, which is waived into the public domain under CC0 and which you can find on OpenGameArt.org. If you'd like to support Chris Weber's work on this and other user freedom projects, you can donate at patreon.com/CWEBBER. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey everyone, Serge again. I know we touched on some heavy topics at the end there. If you're feeling in crisis and need someone to talk to, I volunteer on a text-based crisis hotline called Crisis Text Line. You can text it anytime, day or night, and talk to a trained crisis counselor. Just text 741-741 if you're in the U.S., or 686-868 if you're in Canada. That's 741-741 in the US or 686-868 in Canada. We'll also have some other resources in the show notes. You're not alone.